More water sloshed in my mouth. I spit most of it out, but some went down, making me cough and half retch. I started to sink below the surface and fought my way back up, not swimming but only splashing wildly, expending 9 times the energy I needed to stay afloat. Panic made its first appearance, nibbling through my dazed bewilderment with sharp little rat teeth. I realized I could hear a high, sweet buzzing. How many blows had my poor old head taken? One from Whitmore's fist, one from DeVore's cane, one rock, or had it been two? Christ, I couldn't remember. Get hold of yourself, for God's sake. You're not going to let him beat you this way, are you? Drown you like that little boy was drowned? No, not if I could help it. I trod water and ran my left hand down the back of my head. Not too far above the nape, I encountered a goose egg that was still rising. When I pressed on it, the pain made me feel like throwing up and fainting at the same time. Tears rose in my eyes and rolled down my cheeks. There were only traces of blood on the tips of my fingers when I looked at them, but it was hard to tell about cuts when you were in the water.
You look like a woodchuck caught out in the rain, Noonan.
Now his voice seemed to roll to where I was, as if across a great distance.
Fuck you, I called. I'll see you in jail for this.
He looked at Whitmore. She looked back with an identical expression, and they both laughed. If someone had put an Uzi in my hands at that moment, I would have killed them both with no hesitation, and then asked for a second clip so I could machine gun the bodies. With no Uzi to hand, I began to dog paddle south toward my house. They paced me along the street, he rolling in his whisper-quiet wheelchair, she walking beside him as solemn as a pastor and pausing every now and then to pick up a likely-looking rock. I hadn't swum enough to be tired, but I was. It was mostly shock, I suppose. Finally, I tried to draw a breath at the wrong time, swallowed more water, and panicked completely. I began to swim in toward the shore, wanting to get to where I could stand up. Roget Whitmore began to fire rocks at me immediately, first using the ones she had lined up between her left arm and her midriff, then those she'd stockpiled in DeVore's lap. She was warmed up, she wasn't throwing like a girl anymore, and her aim was deadly. Stones splashed all around me. I batted another away, a big one that likely would have cut open my forehead if it had hit, but her follow-up struck my bicep and tore a long scratch there. Enough. I rolled over and swam back out beyond her range, gasping for breath, trying to keep my head up in spite of the growing ache in the back of my neck. When I was clear, I trod water and looked in at them. Whitmore had come all the way to the edge of the embankment, wanting to get every foot of distance she could, hell, every damned inch. DeVore was parked behind her in his wheelchair. They were both still grinning, and now their faces were as red as the faces of imps in hell. Red sky at night, sailor's delight. Another 20 minutes, and it would be getting dark. Could I keep my head above water for another 20 minutes? I thought so, if I didn't panic again, but not much longer. I thought of drowning in the dark, looking up and seeing Venus just before I went under for the last time, and the panic rat slashed me with its teeth again. The panic rat was worse than Roget and her rocks, much worse. Maybe not worse than DeVore. I looked both ways along the lakefront, checking the street, wherever it wove out of the trees for 12 feet or 12 yards. I didn't care about being embarrassed anymore, but I saw no one. Dear God, where was everybody? Gone to the Mountain View in Freiburg for a pizza or the Village Cafe for a milkshake? What do you want? I called into the old man. Do you want me to tell you I'll butt out of your business? Okay, I'll butt out. He laughed.
Do I look like I was born yesterday, Noonan?
Well, I hadn't expected it to work. Even if I'd been sincere about it, he wouldn't have believed me. We just want to see how long you can swim, Whitmore said, and threw another rock, a long, lazy toss that fell about 5 feet short of where I was. They mean to kill me, I thought. They really do. Yes, and what was more, they might well get away with it. A crazy idea, both plausible and implausible at the same time, rose in my mind. I could see Roget Whitmore tacking a notice to the community doings board outside the Lakeview General Store. To the Martians of TR-90, greetings. Mr. Maxwell DeVore, everyone's favorite Martian, will give each resident of the TR $100 if no one will use the street on Friday evening, the 17th of July, between the hours of 6 and 8 p.m. Keep our summer friends away, too, and remember, good Martians are like good monkeys. They see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. I couldn't really believe it. Not even in my current situation. And yet I almost could. At the very least, I had to grant him the luck of the devil. Tired, my sneakers heavier than ever, I tried to push one of them off and succeeded only in taking on another mouthful of lake water. They stood there watching me, DeVore occasionally picking the mask up from his lap and having a revivifying suck. I couldn't wait until dark. The sun exits in a hurry here in western Maine, as it does, I guess, in mountain country everywhere. But the twilights are long and lingering. By the time it got dark enough in the west to move without being seen, the moon would have risen in the east. I found myself imagining my obituary in the New York Times, the headline reading, "Popular Romantic Suspense Novelist Drowns in Maine." Deborah Weinstock would provide them with the author photo from the forthcoming Helen's Promise. Harold Oblowski would say all the right things, and he'd also remember to put a modest, but not tiny, death notice in Publishers Weekly. He would go half and half with Putnam's on it, and I sank, swallowed more water, and spat it out. I began pummeling the lake again and forced myself to stop. From the shore, I could hear Roget Whitmore's tinkling laughter. "You bitch," I thought. "You scrawny bit." "Mike," Joe said. The voice was in my head, but it wasn't the one I make when I'm imagining her side of a mental dialogue, or when I just miss her and need to whistle her up for a while. As if to underline this, something splashed to my right, splashed hard. When I looked in that direction, I saw no fish, not even a ripple. What I saw instead was our swimming float, anchored about 100 yards away in the sunset-colored water. "I can't swim that far, baby," I croaked. "Did you say something, Noonan?" DeVore called from the shore. He cupped a mocking hand to one of his huge wax-lump ears. "Couldn't quite make it out. You sound all out of breath." More tinkling laughter from Whitmore. He was Johnny Carson. She was Ed McMahon. "You can make it. I'll help you." The float, I realized, might be my only chance. There wasn't another one on this part of the shore, and it was at least 10 yards beyond Whitmore's longest rock shot so far. I began to dog paddle in that direction, my arms now as leaden as my feet. Each time I felt my head on the verge of going under, I paused, treading water, telling myself to take it easy. I was in pretty good shape and doing okay, telling myself that if I didn't panic, I'd be all right. The old bitch and the even older bastard resumed pacing me, but they saw where I was headed and the laughter stopped. So did the taunts. For a long, long time, the swimming float seemed to draw no closer. I told myself that was just because the light was fading, the color of the water draining from red to purple to a near black that was the color of DeVore's gums. But I was able to muster less and less conviction for this idea as my breath shortened and my arms grew heavier. When I was still 30 yards away, a cramp struck my left leg. I rolled sideways like a swamped sailboat, trying to reach the bunched muscle. More water poured down my throat. I tried to cough it out, then retched and went under with my stomach still trying to heave and my fingers still looking for the knotted place above the knee. "I'm really drowning," I thought, strangely calm now that it was happening. "This is how it happens. This is it." Then I felt a hand seize me by the nape of the neck. The pain of having my hair yanked brought me back to reality in a flash. It was better than an epinephrine injection. I felt another hand clamp around my left leg. There was a brief but terrific sense of heat. The cramp let go, and I broke the surface swimming, really swimming this time, not just dog paddling. And in what seemed like seconds, I was clinging to the ladder on the side of the float, breathing in great, snatching gasps, waiting to see if I was going to be all right or if my heart was going to detonate in my chest like a grenade. At last, my lungs started to overcome my oxygen debt, and everything began to calm down. I gave it another minute, then climbed out of the water and into what was now the ashes of twilight. I stood facing west for a little while, bent over with my hands on my knees, dripping on the boards. Then I turned around, meaning this time to flip them not just a single bird, but that fabled double eagle. There was no one to flip it to. The street was empty. DeVore and Rogette Whitmore were gone. Maybe they were gone. I'd do well to remember there was a lot of street I couldn't see. I sat cross-legged on the float until the moon rose, waiting and watching for any movement. A half hour, I think, maybe 45 minutes. I checked my watch but got no help there. It had shipped some water and stopped at 6:45 p.m. To the other satisfactions DeVore owed me, I could now add the price of one Timex Indiglo. That's $29.95, asshole. Cough it up. At last, I climbed back down the ladder, slipped into the water, and stroked for shore as quietly as I could. I was rested. My head had stopped aching, although the knot above the nape of my neck still throbbed steadily, and I no longer felt off balance and incredulous. In some ways, that had been the worst of it, trying to cope not just with the apparition of the drowned boy, the flying rocks in the lake, but with the pervasive sense that none of this could be happening, that rich old software moguls did not try to drown novelists who strayed into their line of sight. Had tonight's adventure been a case of simply straying into DeVore's view, though? A coincidental meeting, no more than that? Wasn't it likely he'd been having me watched ever since the 4th of July, maybe from the other side of the lake by people with high-powered optical equipment? Paranoid bullshit, I would have said. At least I would have said it before the two of them almost sank me in Dark Score Lake like a kid's paper boat in a mud puddle. I decided I didn't care who might be watching from the other side of the lake. I didn't care if the two of them were still lurking on one of the tree-shielded parts of the street, either. I swam until I could feel strands of waterweed tickling my ankles and see the crescent of my beach. Then I stood up, wincing at the air, which now felt cold on my skin. I limped to shore, one hand raised to fend off a hail of rocks, but no rocks came. I stood for a moment on the street, my jeans and polo shirt dripping, looking first one way, then the other. It seemed I had this little part of the world to myself. Last, I looked back at the water, where weak moonlight beat a track from the thumbnail of beach out to the swimming float. "Thanks, Joe," I said, then started up the railroad ties to the house. I got about halfway, then had to stop and sit down. I had never been so utterly tired in my whole life.